Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is the podcast of The Brian Lehrer Show. This is just one segment of the show. Each weekday, Brian and his guests take on the topics of the day, and you can hear all of these conversations on demand at WNYC.org. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
Well, we begin this week uncomfortably. Uncomfortably because no news organization likes to be put in the position of reporting on itself. But public broadcasting stations in the United States find ourselves in that position right now. Full disclosure, on this issue, I have strong personal feelings, am directly affected, and am far from neutral, as you might imagine. But here goes. Later this week, the House of Representatives will vote on an appropriations bill that includes deep cuts to public broadcast funding. It includes a cut of 23%, or $87 million, to program funding, and it eliminates all capital funding to help public stations switch to digital transmission or replace aging satellites. That's a $39 million, or 100% reduction from the current fiscal year. Counting the program funding cuts and the capital funding cuts together, the total for fiscal 2006 would be approximately a 45% reduction in the money public radio and TV got from the federal government this year. The cuts were approved on Thursday by the House Appropriations Committee and sent to the full House for this week's expected vote, should come Wednesday or Thursday, we're told. If approved, the Senate would likely vote a few days later, with debate expected to be even more contentious in the Senate. Now, Appropriations Committee Chairman Ralph Regula, Republican from Ohio, issued a statement calling the cut necessary because of the need for fiscal discipline at the same time as the government has committed to increases in things like Pell Grants, community health centers, Medicare, and dislocated worker assistance. So Chairman Regula only puts this in a fiscal context with no expression of disapproval for public radio or television. But this proposed cut comes just as the head of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, Kenneth Tomlinson, has been at odds with NPR, PBS, and public stations over accusations of bias by him against them and accusations of bias by many of them against him. Public broadcasters wonder if there is any connection. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting, by way of background, is the funding arm of public broadcasting. It takes the federal funding and distributes it to stations under a formula and to individual shows that it selects through competitive grant making. It is also supposed to serve as a firewall that protects the system's editorial independence from the politicians who approve the money. So we will now get five different views of the public broadcast funding situation. Our first guest is Jody Schneider, economics editor at Congressional Quarterly. Jody, thank you very much for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Good morning.
This 45% cut for public broadcasting, was it unexpected?
Yeah, it was not expected because it was not proposed in the earlier budget. However, Ralph Regula, who chairs the Labor, Health, and Human Services Education Subcommittee, we call it Labor H for short, of the overall Appropriations Committee, came out on June 9th and did not include CPP funding for fiscal 2008 when he introduced his bill. Basically, appropriators typically provide 2 years of advance funding for the CPB. He didn't include that.
So a correction to what I said before, he's not the House Appropriations Committee.
No, Jerry Lewis from California is. Ralph Regula is what we call one of the cardinals who run a subcommittee. Very influential, powerful lawmakers.
So is that still in there, completely defunding the Corporation for Public Broadcasting in two fiscal years from now?
Well, it wasn't in Regula's, what Regula had appropriated. However, when the full Appropriations Committee met last week, the whole Appropriations Committee met, David Obey of Wisconsin, who is the ranking Democrat, basically offered an amendment that restored $400 million of the CPB for fiscal 2008, and it was adopted. So that's a good sign. The fact that it was adopted on the House Appropriations Committee, it now goes to the House floor. And usually, if it's adopted in the committee, it often will have enough muster to pass on the House floor, especially this one because it got so much attention.
And I want to read from a statement issued by Congressman Regula explaining the vote to cut public broadcasting so deeply. The first line reads, "In order to exercise fiscal discipline and reduce deficits, the administration has proposed to cut spending in non-security discretionary accounts by nearly 1%, the tightest such restraint proposed since the Reagan administration." So my question for you about that is, if the overall cut in non-security discretionary spending is under 1%, why does public broadcast funding get cut 45%?
Right. Well, that's a good question. Basically, his answer to that question would be that they don't want to they need to curb advance funding, what they call advance funding, and CPB, as we just noted, gets that. It gets 2 years at a time because of the mounting budget deficit. His quote was, Regula's quote on the floor was, "I would like to forward fund a lot of things." But of course, when they pick certain things, they pick things they don't like. Appropriators are not supposed to defund things. They're not supposed to make policy when they're doing the funding, when they're doing the spending bills. But of course, a backdoor way to not fund things is often to say, we just can't afford it.
Yeah. Now, there is this whole other parallel thing going on outside of Congress. As I mentioned, Kenneth Tomlinson, the man appointed by President Bush to head the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, is trading accusations of bias with public television and radio content providers.
Right.
He says the programming has a liberal bias. They say he's a conservative activist bent on politicizing a neutral service. Is there evidence that this is related or unrelated to the cuts being proposed in Congress?
Well, with a Republican majority, and there's this bill, by the way, this Labor H bill, is the most contentious of the bills. It always is, because basically the things that are in it, health, education, social programs, are often the most contentious measures. It really attracts the debates over social policy issues. In the past, it's attracted them over such things as abortion and labor rules. So it's the hot one. It's the hot potato. And CPB, I think, is getting caught up in some of that. One would think, however, that if they are already making some, if they're doing this in a policy way through Tomlinson, that they wouldn't necessarily need to do it as well through the appropriations process. And some people think that's what's going to happen, that it will get funded, that they'll kind of fight about it, but that they will really do their policy through Tomlinson rather than having to do it through the money.
Well, let me play two clips back to back and get your reaction. This first one is Kenneth Tomlinson on the relationship he sees between the bias he sees and the actions of Congress.
But my goodness, if the leaders of public broadcasting don't understand they have a problem on Capitol Hill, I wonder where they've been. And the problem is not Ken Tomlinson. I've been trying to help them out.
But now here is Congressman Ralph Regula, who led the vote last week for this defunding. He says bias problem. This is a very short cut, but you'll hear he basically says bias problem. What bias problem?
My colleagues have not really expressed any great concern to me.
Okay, that was a shorter version of a longer clip that I thought we had. But basically he said on the topic of bias or quality, public broadcasting quality, his colleagues had not expressed any problem. So at very least, we seem to have a bizarre situation here. The people who have to vote for the funding are saying no problem with your job performance, and the person who's supposed to be asking for the funding is denigrating, in effect, his own product. Is this so? You think this is a good cop, bad cop routine?
I think so. And it's the kabuki dance we often see in Congress around these issues. Again, because the appropriators are in this interesting position of supposedly just funding things, you know, bias-free. They're supposed to just act on these requests in a way that's, you know, shows fiscal discipline and is not about the social policy issues that they sometimes are having to deal with. They can do this. They can play this game saying, hey, look, we're just looking at the deficit, and we're not looking at the other side of it, whereas, of course, you know, the other side of it comes in and says, well, this is our problem. Yeah. I think it will get funded. They had MoveOn.org launched an email petition campaign last week. There have been other pressures. And I think that they also want to get this budget through. The House, as we said, will vote on this on the floor.
So the real fight is going to be in the Senate?
Right. Right. The fight will be in the Senate, and the fight may be in conference. The Senate is moving much more slowly on its spending bills than the House is. Jerry Lewis, the House Appropriations Committee chairman, is going to get all his passed by July 4th on the floor. So he'll be done by the July 4th recess. The Senate has not even begun to take them up on the floor, and they have not at all dealt with the contentious ones, even in committee. It will probably be, it may be July, it may be after they come back from the August recess before the Senate deals with this. And basically, the House has been moving a lot of its contentious issues to conference. They'll approve amendments, they'll adopt amendments, they'll pass bills that may have some stuff in there that they don't like or that the Republican majority doesn't like, but they'll just wait to let the Senate do the dirty work, and then they'll figure it out in conference.
Jody Schneider, economics editor at Congressional Quarterly, my guest for another few minutes as we talk about the proposed funding cuts for public broadcasting here on WNYC. 10 years ago, then-Speaker Newt Gingrich, Jody, as you know, tried to abolish Corporation for Public Broadcast Funding. It turned out to be a highly unpopular idea, and he backed off of it entirely. Polls still show public broadcasting is right near the top. I'm going to read from some of those polls later in the hour, but second only to defense spending in public approval, at least according to this Roper poll that recently came out. And I wonder how different the political context is today from the debate in 1995.
Yeah, I think they will remember that. I think they, you know, like a lot of things that Newt Gingrich and his team did, they tried to, you know, they just kind of threw it out there and said, all right, let's try to get rid of this, anything they viewed as at all liberal or left. And then when it came to be the public and sometimes the middle said, hey, we like this, then in some cases they were forced to back off. I think that is going on to some degree today with the Republican majority in both chambers and in the White House, of course. But at the same time, I think they do know about history. And I think that's why, for instance, when David Obey, who is the basically Democrat who makes all the noise on a lot of these bills, but is often respected because he's been around so long. He's been doing this 35 years, and he's the target for that. When he offered that amendment the other day, it was adopted. Rather than saying, no, we're not going to do this, they were getting these emails. They were feeling this pressure.
Sorry, he offered what amendment?
He offered the amendment to restore the funding in the committee last week.
That's the longer-term funding.
Right, and it was adopted. So I think basically what we're seeing is they're going to push and push, and then when push comes to shove, they're not going to want to necessarily totally defund it,
right,
because that's when they really hear the noise, and that's when they start hearing from constituents who may not be, they may not be Republicans, they may be Democrats, or they may not be, but there is a constituency for this, and I think they've started hearing that.
Right. So the zero funding for 2 years from now got knocked out by that amendment. The 45% cut for next year is still in. There's a growing number of Christian not-for-profit broadcasting stations. Do they ever lobby for federal funding?
They haven't yet. Basically, they've not been able to do that and still be able to make the argument that they should, you know, that we should have smaller government and the other things that they agree with. So they haven't done that yet. Although, of course, they get, you know, often they could get breaks because they're viewed as nonprofits.
Could that have anything to do with this?
I don't think so. I think this was more just a sort of, you know, this is one of these things that we're going to, that the Republican majority is going to try to knock the legs out of under, and they were trying to do that.
We have 1 minute left. Three senators, including Hillary Clinton of New York, are calling for a delay in a vote that could come today by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting on its new president. And they're reportedly set to confirm the leading candidate, a woman who used to be co-chair of the Republican National Committee. And Senator Clinton and the others think that is politicizing CPB in a way that the law did not set it up to be or to do. Are you following this matter? And in literally in 20 seconds, is this going to be a big thing in Congress, which oversees CPB?
I don't know that it'll be a big thing in Congress, but as I said before, I think rather than totally defunding CPB and going the funding route, they're going to try to put their own people in there and do it that way, which frankly may be more effective for them.
Jody Schneider is economics editor at Congressional Quarterly. They do, let's see, I'm looking for your website address here.
It's www.cq.com.
That's easy, cq.com. Jody, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
We'll come back and talk to two public broadcast station managers, including WNYC's Laura Walker. Stay tuned. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and as you just heard in that spot, which we've been running through the last few days, and it's just a coincidence that it came up now, actually, there is this proposed 45% cut to public broadcasting's federal funding. And now we will hear from the top managers at two very different public radio stations about what they think the cuts could mean to their stations in practical terms. WNYC President Laura Walker, who you just heard on tape, is now in our studio live in an unaccustomed spot as a guest on the show. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Brian.
And on the phone, we have Paul Stankovich, General Manager for Alaska Public Telecommunications, KAKM Radio, and KSKA-TV in Anchorage, Alaska. Hi, Paul. Thanks for getting up quite early in the morning to do this with us.
Good morning. It's about 6:20 here.
I want to know what you each think is at stake for your stations. If these cuts go through, Laura, I'm sure our listeners want to know what you think is at stake for WNYC.
Yeah, well, we get federal funding in three forms. We get about $2 million a year in unrestricted support, and that is tremendously helpful. It is really acts. It really is a we get more funding the more our listeners pledge and the more our corporate sponsors give. So it's really kind of a match. And this is important funding to help fund national programs and local programs like this. So those programs are in jeopardy if we lose a lot of that funding. A second way that we get CPB support is from the program fund itself for specific programs that are national programs. We've gotten significant support for On the Media, for Studio 360, for The Next Big Thing. We have a big proposal in there for in the CPB right now to help support diverse voices here in New York. So that would limit the kind of production we could do. And thirdly, we have gotten support from the PTFP, which is a special program out of the Department of Commerce, actually, for capital support. That was one of the things that helped us recover from 9/11, where we got about $1 million or more to help us recover and get the antenna back up at the Empire State and then at Four Times Square as well. So it could significantly affect us.
Paul Stankovich, what's at stake for public radio and television in Alaska?
Well, there's 26 public radio stations in Alaska, 4 public TV stations, and some of those stations are very heavily dependent on federal funding and state funding, primarily because they serve small villages of less than 1,000 people, and they could be support or lose support of about 50% of their funding since they have no cash economy in some of those villages. So there are some stations in Alaska that literally will have to turn off the lights if this funding goes away. Here in Anchorage, we're in a slightly different situation because our community, the largest in Alaska, has about 15% of its funding as federal support. However, losing that core support will very much cripple our opportunity to do local programming. As Laura said, we also get PTFP funding to build the infrastructure needed. We hope to move to digital radio very soon, and that'll all go away. On the television side, one of the most critical things is ready-to-learn programming, where children's programming will be cut and no longer funded.
Laura, in WNYC's case, we boast how independent we've become from government money already and that federal funding is less than 10% of our total funding. So is this a hit we could absorb through things like, God forbid, more membership drives?
Well, we could certainly do and probably would consider doing more membership drives or putting more underwriting on the air. I think fundamentally, though, this would force us to really look at what we are able to afford, because I don't think we could be able to make this all up through from our members and from corporate support. I think we would have to look fundamentally at the national programming we buy and the local programming that we do. I think there's also another question here, which is should the federal government support public broadcasting, and should it support those small stations in Alaska that are in many cases probably the only kind of communications that many people in Alaska in those very rural areas have. Should federal funding help to support independent journalism, one that is committed in this time to something that is very different, to in-depth news, to local voices? And I think that the answer is yes, and I think that Roper polls and other polls have shown that most Americans believe that the answer is yes.
Paul, what would you have to do in Alaska to make it up, and what percentage or proportion of your funding stream comes from Washington?
Well, in my case specifically, it's about 15%, but I also manage the state public radio network, which produces news for Alaska, sort of a mini NPR, and that's dependent on individual stations supporting the activity. We are the only news organization that is statewide in Alaska. It's a huge state, roughly half the size of the United States geographically, but has a population of only 2 million in the entire state. So the kinds of cuts that we'd have to make would probably end statewide news coverage. We have a reporter based in Washington, D.C. We have a reporter based in our capital, Juneau, plus 11 other reporters scattered around the states. I don't see how that can be sustained. So that opportunity to present news to the public and the only news that many of these communities receive, it goes away. So it's a critical support mechanism for building everything else that we have in Alaska.
Let me ask you both. The statement from the House Appropriations Subcommittee Chairman Ralph Regula on this proposed cut says, quote, "We had to make tough choices by reconciling competing priorities with the resources available." And we all know there's a deficit by way of background. "Supportive programs including the No Child Left Behind Act, health research at the National Institutes of Health, expansion of community health centers, and dislocated worker assistance necessitated that we reduce and terminate many programs." Now, can you argue that in a time of big deficits, public broadcasting is a better use of taxpayer funds than more for community health clinics or No Child Left Behind? Paul?
No, I don't think that we can. I don't think that we need to be placed in quite that position. I think that all of those programs deserve the funding that they need to sustain the services they provide. The real problem with federal funding is where the majority of funds are earmarked these days, with the war on Iraq causing so much of that deficit to be part of what we have to deal with. It's really not these programs that are causing that jeopardy. It's the programs that are supporting various mechanisms to support the activities that we're involved with around the world.
Well, that may be causing it, but here we are.
Well, that's true, and I don't think it's appropriate to pit us against those that also deserve funding. The president proposed a 25% cut. In Congress, the cut was considerably more, 45%. So even the president recognizes that everyone must absorb a little bit of the deficit. But the Congress seems to have thought differently.
Laura, same question.
I think the question really is, should the federal government be helping to support public broadcasting? And I believe that the American people believe that the answer is yes, according to several national polls. When President Johnson signed the Public Broadcasting Act in 1967, he said, "The Corporation of Public Broadcasting will assist stations and producers who aim for the best in broadcasting. It will try to prove that what educates can also be exciting. It will get part of its support from our government, but it will be carefully guarded from government or from party control. It will be free, and it will be independent, and it will belong to all of our people. I hope," he said, "that those who lead the corporation will direct that power toward the great and not the trivial purposes. At its best, public broadcasting would help make our nation a replica of the old Greek marketplace, where public affairs took place in view of all the citizens." And I think that is a really interesting quote, and one that is very, very applicable today in a time when media is dominated by pay services, by distorted reality programs and conflict-driven talk programs. There, I believe, and I think most Americans believe, that there is a place for independent journalism one that and for in-depth news and places like this that really are a forum for discussion and debate that I believe is essential to maintaining a healthy democracy, and federal support can help to maintain that.
WNYC President Laura Walker and Paul Stankovich, General Manager for Alaska Public Telecommunications, KAKM Radio, and KSKA-TV in Anchorage, Alaska. Both, before you go, very briefly, Paul, what do you want your listeners to do? Anything?
Well, our listeners need to do exactly what Laura's messages said. We've done the same thing. We have messages on TV and radio. They need to contact the congressional delegations, and in our case, the state legislature, and let them know these cuts are unacceptable.
I think whatever your opinion is, listeners, you should please let your congressman know. There will be a vote this week.
We continue our coverage. Laura Walker, Paul Stankovich, thank you very much. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now more on the proposed 45% cut to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which the House is expected to vote on Wednesday or Thursday. We will hear now from a supporter and an opponent of public broadcast funding. First, David Boaz, Executive Vice President of the Libertarian Think Tank, the Cato Institute. David, welcome back to WNYC. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
And you think that public broadcasting shouldn't be funded at all. Why not?
Because I believe in the separation of news and state.
Go ahead. That's it?
I think that's sufficient. I don't think that the taxpayers should fund news and public affairs programming. I don't think they should fund arts programming either. I think art is too important, too moving, too deeply touching to want the government's hand in it. But news and public affairs programming, I heard your WNYC president talking about the need for independent journalism, and I just think it is odd to think that the way you get independent journalism is to have the federal government fund it. When we hear that China or Iraq is the government is funding a television station, what we don't think is, oh, at last they'll have some independent journalism.
Well, China or Iraq would be one model, authoritarian states, or, you know, at least the old Iraq. Maybe Britain or Germany or France or Japan would be better models where they're, of course, also have public broadcasting that is greatly valued.
Yes, and of course BBC has been sort of notorious recently for its unremitting campaign against the Blair administration. So it's an interesting kind of independent journalism that is, in at least in the United Kingdom, allowed to be so left-wing that it campaigns steadily against a Labour government.
Well, that, of course, is a charge that the Labour government makes, and the BBC denies, saying it's doing what it's mandated to do, which is asking critical questions of whoever's in power, Labour or Conservatives
or
whoever.
Right, but come on, let's be real. I mean, I was looking at the article that you have posted on your website from Salon, and they quote a frontline producer saying, what we do is ask tough questions of people in power. There has never in history been a frontline episode on the burden of taxes or the burden of regulation and what it costs us in terms of economic growth. They don't ask those kinds of tough questions. They ask a particular kind of tough question. And I am all for the marketplace of ideas. I'm glad we have CNN and Fox. I'm glad we have the Wall Street Journal editorial page and the Wall Street Journal news page. That's a nice balance. In the New York Times, you have the New York Times editorial page also balancing the Wall Street Journal editorial page. I think that's all fine. What I don't think is that the government should put its thumb on the scale in the marketplace of democracy.
I'm sure the frontline producers would also probably take issue with your characterization. But I have a Cato position paper here, your group, that says eliminate the National Endowment for the Arts, National Endowment for the Humanities, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. It says government should not be supporting symphony orchestras or scholars or starving artists any more than starving mechanics. So your position on public broadcasting is part of a much broader philosophy that you have about the role of government. Yes?
Well, absolutely. It's part of the philosophy of the separation of ideas and state. As I say, I believe in the marketplace of ideas. I believe in a marketplace in arts. I believe in cosmopolitanism, but I don't think the government should intervene. I don't think the taxpayers should be taxed to support some kinds of art, some kinds of ideas, some kinds of news programming.
Isn't it a very limited notion of the reason for a public square and public funding? The reason for all of these is that there are things very meaningful to American life that the marketplace cannot support at a meaningful level, like scholarly pursuits and, sadly, symphony orchestras, and, as it happens, in-depth, non-commercialized news. I think probably a lot of people were snickering to hear you say that Fox News and CNN would be sufficient. So do none of these values, from the symphony orchestra to non-commercial news, have national value in Cato's eyes?
Well, I can't speak for Cato. I can only speak for myself. You mentioned the public square and then public television, I think, or public radio. I think there's a very big difference there. The public square is where we all go and we seek to make our voices heard. But with public broadcasting, some people get to have their voices heard, but not everybody.
But wait, forgive me.
In the marketplace of democracy.
Here I'm going to take a little personal issue.
Wait.
I would be a dead man if I didn't. Meaning I would be brain dead if I didn't react to that. Do you not think that public broadcasting reaches out and puts on a bigger diversity of voices than the commercial networks?
No, I do not. No, I think that's crazy. Public broadcasting puts on a lot of voices, and to be sure, in your hour here, you're giving a few minutes to a dissenting voice. I do notice that you're challenging each of my statements, and it was pretty much all softballs up until now, but I understand. I mean, I'm arguing that you should lose your taxpayer funding, and so that is Daniel walking into the lion's den. But no, I do not think that compared to all of the privately funded newspapers and privately funded radio and television stations in America, public broadcasting is putting on a wider variety of voices.
Okay,
in private radio, we have Rush Limbaugh. We also have Air America. We have lots of local talk shows of left, right, and even libertarian.
That's a very narrow definition of diversity, though. That's just left, right.
And libertarian, which is more than
yes.
We sometimes get. But you mean in addition there are things that are not strictly political?
Correct.
Yeah, well, I think those things are on radio and television as well.
Let me ask you one last thing. We're going to run out of time in a minute. That is about what the public rates as good use of public dollars. Now, granted, the survey that I'm going to quote from was commissioned by PBS, but it's a Roper poll, and let me read you some of this. It says, according to these findings, and these are consistent, you know, relatively over a long period of time, PBS is the second most valuable service taxpayers received, outranked only by the military by 2 percentage points. 25% said only 25% said the military is good use of tax dollars. 23% said PBS is. 41% of Americans rank PBS as the most trusted source for news and public affairs program compared with other network broadcasters. 62% of those polled believe the availability of PBS is very important. By contrast, commercial broadcasting and cable networks were considered very important only by 42% and 35%. Respectively. The majority, 51%, believe the amount of funding PBS receives is, quote, too little, and 82% believe that public and private funding given to PBS from government corporations and individuals is, quote, money well spent. In our last 30 seconds, or we'll continue past the break if we have to, what do you say to the public?
Well, I say to the public that this is a democracy, or at least a constitutional republic, and we're having a debate, and I haven't read this poll, and I have never known an interest group to put out a poll that found against what they hoped, but I don't know that there's anything wrong with the poll. All I would say is if that is the case, then I am arguing, where I have an opportunity, that it is not a good idea for the government to be funding the production of
David
news.
David Post,
and
hang
ideas.
On. I want you to finish it after a break. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We'll finish up very briefly with David Bowes, Executive Vice President of the Cato Institute, as we talk about the proposed 45% cut for public radio and television that could be voted on Wednesday or Thursday by the House. David Brose, did you want to just finish a thought before the break and say anything else you want to say to wrap up?
Well, my thought basically is that I'm not particularly concerned about the immediate funding cut or anything. What I am concerned about is the separation of ideas and state. I think we should keep the government out of putting its thumb on the scale of public debate, and I think inevitably that's what you do when you have government funding of arts and news and public affairs.
Okay, David, thank you very much for coming on with us.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now more on the proposed 45% cut to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which the House could vote on Wednesday or Thursday. With me now is Congresswoman Nita Lowey of Westchester and the Bronx, Democrat from New York. Yeah, after I just said you're from Westchester and the Bronx, then I said Democrat from New York. That was smart. Maybe we don't.
Actually, Brian, my district changed.
Oh.
It's Westchester and Rockland, no longer
okay.
in the Bronx.
Forgive
although
me.
I grew up in the Bronx.
That's it. I don't deserve to be on the air.
No, you do.
You've been outspoken on this on the pro-funding side. Tell us why.
Well, frankly, as you probably remember, 10 years ago, I fought cuts with my colleagues to CPB, and we're ready to fight them again. And it was Bert and Ernie that really saved the day. I feel very strongly that public broadcasting is a source of high-quality programming, and it's just too important to families throughout the country to be allowed to cut to the bone. You just look at, you're saying, the feedback that you're getting. I'm certainly getting it in my office, and I wake up to NPR, I go to sleep to NPR, and I know in thousands of communities across the country, Americans turn to public radio and television for educational programs
and by the
to get
way,
all sides of an issue.
I want to tell our listeners that after we finish with Congresswoman Lowey, we're going to take your phone calls on this for the rest of the hour. This is not a poll. Obviously, there's a self-selecting audience. The vast majority of you would probably support continued federal funding for public radio because you're listening to and valuing the station. So we're going to seek diverse points of view, as we always do, and have a conversation in the call-in. So if you want to say anything about this topic, 212-433-WNYC, and that's our new call-in number if you don't have it yet, 212-433-9692. You heard David Bose from the Cato Institute.
Oh, I sure did, Brian.
He said there should be a separation of news and state. And is there not something a little squishy, at least in theory, about the government funding something that's supposed to be independent?
Well, I just have to throw in here, since I have the microphone right now, I would hope he'd feel as strongly about separation of church and state. Because, frankly, that's the infringement. That is the view that really worries me. But getting back to PBS, what you're seeing is more than 9 hours a day of educational programs that are really important for children in particular, math, science skills. I have 7 grandchildren, and I know they depend on it. These are the services that are not provided by commercial television stations simply because they're not financially profitable.
But is it really the right thing? And I know you held up Bert and Ernie dolls from Sesame Street, of course, on I guess on the House floor the other day.
Right.
Critics say Sesame Street, of all things, could survive with only private support because it's so popular and sells so many things commercially, like those dolls. Do you disagree? Do you think if you're going to make a case for public broadcasting needing federal funding, that that's not the way to do it?
I think it's essential that public broadcasting get these dollars because the programs that are provided all across the country are supported. These are funds that can leverage additional dollars. And when you look at what's going on now with the huge deficit, it's not as if these funds are going to get rid of the federal deficit and make vast differences in the budget. It's changes frankly, in our tax system, and the deficit is just going to continue to grow and grow. So I feel these funds are absolutely critical to, first of all, allow the broadcasters to plan ahead, to leverage federal funds, to put in place the variety of programs that aren't profitable if the federal government didn't fund it. It's a
but
foundation.
You mentioned the deficit, and Congressman Ralph Regula, the chair of the subcommittee that approved this 45% cut for next year, put this all in the context of the deficit and the spending on security that's heightened since 9/11. He said, quote, "We had to make tough choices by reconciling competing priorities with the resources available. Supportive programs including the No Child Left Behind Act, health research at the National Institutes of Health, expansion of community health centers, and dislocated worker assistance necessitated that we reduce and terminate many programs."
Brian,
so what do you say to him when he
Okay.
I'm talking about myself here, but he's comparing us to expanding community health centers, fully funding No Child Left Behind, things
right.
like that.
Well, first of all, Brian, I serve on that subcommittee of appropriations, and Ralph Regula is a very good, decent person. And he shares with me a real commitment to the whole range of programs you just mentioned. They're all important. But there are 13 appropriations bills, and we shouldn't be competing in our subcommittee against community health centers, education, et cetera. There are 13 bills altogether, and when we get our allocation, I think the amount of money, for example, that's going to some other programs has to be considered with regard to our bill, and I think our bill should have gotten a larger allocation. So it's a matter of priorities and how we want to live in our country and what we think is important. And for me, public broadcasting is a key part of education. It's our way to present the news, in my judgment, in a non-biased, thoughtful way instead of sound bites that you see on so many of the other channels. So I would have provided a different allocation to our committee because it's acknowledged that between health and education, the whole National Institutes of Health program isn't being funded adequately this year.
Congresswoman, just very briefly, by way of political analysis from your point of view, do you see a political climate that's different from 10 years ago when Newt Gingrich tried and then backed off drastically reducing public broadcast funding?
Well, I happen to believe that although we as members of Congress are privileged to serve in the Congress and have a vote, it's the people's voice that really counts. And so I would encourage all those who are believers, who understand the importance of having a thoughtful, non-biased presentation of the news and educational programs, call their legislators and make it clear that Bert and Ernie and the range of programs that I watch and many of my family watch have to be saved.
But is this different from, answer the question on a political analysis level.
Look, during the Clinton years, we were operating from a surplus. Now we have a huge deficit. But my point is, we're not talking about billions of dollars.
In 1995, there was not a surplus, by the way. There was the same.
It's gone in 1994.
There was the same debate in terms of the deficit.
Well, I would just say the deficit continues to grow, and we pass huge supplementals, which aren't even counted. You know, if they're called emergency supplementals, they're not even counted. So I think this is an emergency because I think our kids' education and an honest, thoughtful dialogue is just important to being a citizen of the country. So I would just urge the people to call and contact members of Congress.
Congresswoman Nita Lowey, Democrat from Westchester and Rockland, after the last redistricting. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian. Have a good day.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and so we'll spend the rest of this hour, and this whole guest list ran a little long, so we're not going to have many minutes for calls today. We obviously will come back to this topic, and I'll repeat the full disclosure I gave at the top of the hour. As you might imagine, I have strong personal feelings about this issue. I'm directly affected by it. I am not neutral on this issue, as you wouldn't be if you thought the viability and integrity of your field of work was under unfair attack. So having given you that full disclosure, we'll take some phone calls right now. And let's see. Stephen in Bayside, you're on WNYC. Hi, Stephen.
Hello?
Hi, Stephen. You're on the air.
Okay. Hi, Brian. How are you?
I'm okay, thank you.
Yes, I'm a frequent listener to your show. I love your show. I also love Leonard Lopage, John Schwartz on the weekend. But I happen to agree with the Cato Institute fellow on this. I think that maybe 20 or 30 years ago, your case would have been an easier case to make. But now with you have satellite radio with hundreds and thousands of channels, satellite cable TV, there's satellite TV. There's so many more options now. I think that the role of PBS has changed.
I would argue that if you look at everything that's on cable television, satellite radio, that what we do in the news and public affairs area particularly is still unique in terms of the depth, in terms of the breadth, in terms of not having to look over our shoulder at the ratings every minute to see what we're going to do, and that on that level it's just as needed, if not more so than ever.
Well, when you're dealing with cable, either satellite television or cable television, I don't think that they're dependent on ratings. I mean, you have, on satellite TV, you have the NASA channel, you have, you can get all sorts of depth, more depth than you could ever want on all sorts of topics. And another thing, too, about...
Let me ask you one to compare one thing, and sure. Forgive me, but, I'll say it again and again. I'm not neutral on this topic.
No, I understand.
Look at the best of what you get on CNN compared to, say, the NewsHour on PBS in terms of the depth of information, as opposed to chasing ratings by being as hot as you can every minute.
No, that's absolutely. But also the cable industry managed to, and I'm sure, I know that they were working with the government when they did this, but the cable industry also did create C-SPAN, which I think is as good as anybody, as far as getting depth and doing the quality programming. And if I believe C-SPAN does not cost the taxpayers a dime, I think I'm correct about that. But, another thing, too, I know that Leonard Lopate always recounts this story about how I think it was Howard Golden who had, when it was publicly funded, when New York City was completely funded by the city of New York, how Howard Golden was leaning on him because he wouldn't put some friend of his on. I'm not so sure that having politicians so directly involved in funding radio is such a great idea. I wouldn't want to see you guys go away, but I do think that maybe you have to adjust with the times.
Steve, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. Paul in Milford, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Good morning. I guess my thought was, I wonder if during the next couple of years where there's going to be very contentious political battles, there's going to be battles for the Senate, and, there's a lot going on in this country right now, whether or not the cutting and the willingness to refund it in 2008 is a way to control the message. Public radio definitely gives more in depth. I can't really comment on whether or not they are, how unbiased, because I'm pretty liberal and I love listening to it, but it just seems like if it's sound bites, then you can control the message. If it's in depth, if you're giving if you guys had the entire debate about the war broadcast, and I'm sure that rankled some people, and to cut off that kind of a possibility for the public to hear, I wonder if it has serious political and almost.
It's certainly what Bill Moyers thinks, and he has said there's, in his opinion, an attack not just on bias, but there's an attack on journalism. And if they can reduce the number of voices that don't feel beholden or feel like they have to pander to public sentiment, then that's part of what this is about. That's for you to judge. But he at least says puts it in that kind of context that you do. And, Paul, I'm going to move on and take another call. Thank you very much. Steve on the Lower East Side, you're on WNYC.
Hi. I really would like to see funding restored, too, but I was tickled by the recollection that at the beginning of last week, WNYC was airing an announcement by Laura Walker boasting of how insignificant government funding had become in the station's finances, and by the end of the week, she was bemoaning the proposed cuts. I think it would be great fun, although against my interests, if the fund cutters could get a hold of the early announcement and publicize it as a noble example of how public stations should properly regard government funding. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Michael in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian.
How you doing?
Hello?
Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air.
My thought is I think all federal funding should be removed from public broadcasting. I love this station and the others I listen to. It's a fantastic product. I think it can easily be supported by people who care. I would pay more not to have the federal government in any way, subtly or otherwise, influencing the content of the radio.
Yeah, but it's interesting. So you come at it from the standpoint of liking the station and thinking that our programming is going to be better if we didn't have public funding.
Absolutely, because you just have to read the newspapers. Once the government pays for something, it exerts influence. Yet what makes public broadcasting distinctive is it's different from commercial media. So people contribute. Why not contribute more? Why not be more interesting? I'm sure, I don't know if it's your show in particular, Brian, but there has to be some influence in content.
I'd say this is the most political show on the station, and we have absolutely zero influence in content from the government. But to reply to you and to the previous caller, my own opinion is that the mix of funding that we have is so valuable because it keeps us from falling off the edge to one side or another. If we were completely listener-supported, I know completely listener-supported stations that are very much devoted to completely agreeing with a listener or one particular group of listeners' base. And if we had to be more corporate underwriting supported, then that comes with certain demographic pressures. Mm-hmm. I think that the balance is so important. But you know what? That's going to be the last word because we're out of time.
Okay, thank you.
Michael, thank you very much. Thanks to all of you who called. Uncomfortable, I said at the beginning of the hour, to report on yourself. Obviously, that's the case, but we will continue to do so. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.
Thanks for checking out today's podcast of The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.